Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce Curdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
I'm a little frazzled, honestly, after it's been a lot of writing in recent days. Yeah. A lot of work. Just like anyone else who's following the NHL and all the fans who are glued to their Twitter accounts and social media trying to figure out. I think that was the Oilers' problem today, Bruce. They came out so flat against Columbus because they were all glued to Twitter all day, just sitting there. Who's going to be traded? Their minds were not on the game, and they came out with, 1 in 10 games for most teams is a stinker. Well, this was that stinker for the Oilers. They lost, 4-2. Okay, sorry, my bad. Yeah, that Perry got that goal. I've been so distracted myself by all the trades that I'm forgetting the game. It's already washed from my mind almost. 4-2 for the Oilers.
4-2 for the Blue Jackets.
For the Blue Jackets.
Not for the Oilers, who got in a hole too deep to dig out of. Frankly, I thought fully earned the 0 points that they got from this game by being the second best team on the ice against Columbus, who had the jump on them most of the game, really, I thought.
Yeah, the grade A shots in the end were 15 to 10 for the Oilers, but a lot of that was the Oilers in the third period had a spurt where they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 grade A shots in a row. Many of them on the power play, 4 of them on the power play. So if you take away that stretch where the Oilers are desperate to come back in the game, Columbus had the edge, and they were the team that outworked and outplayed tonight. The Oilers just didn't seem interested in winning that game at any point, really, in the game. And it was a pathetic effort.
Well, when there's 1:40 to go in the third period and you're trying to get your goalie out and the puck's in your end of the ice and the other team's winning all the races and puck battles, at a certain point, I'm saying, if we're going to dial up the urgency, maybe now would be a good time. Never happened.
It never happened in this game.
I couldn't, on full credit to Columbus, they worked their asses off and they deserved to win this game and they won it. Edmonton's execution was piss poor, and they deserved to lose this game, and they lost it.
Indeed. Bruce, our two good things, two bad things, two numbers in one conundrum podcast. I think we'll spend a little more time on the conundrum stuff tonight than the game itself. Let's just whip through this game, though.
Stinker of a game, yeah.
What's your good thing?
Yeah, my good thing is Chris Knobloch's decision to start Calvin Pickard in this game. And I think he got it bang on, and it was worth the risk of, when you play your backup, you might give up a goal that your starter might not let in, and maybe Stu Skinner would have stole this game. Who knows? But my bigger concern is that at this point and other stretches of the season where the schedule piles up, they have 6 games in 9 days, right? So it's obvious that Pickard's going to play in the 2 back-to-backs last weekend and this upcoming weekend. Mm-hmm. Less obvious was how they were going to split out the games Tuesday and Thursday. And if it had been normal rotation, I would have guessed Skinner would have got both games.
Yeah.
And it would have been 4 games to 2 in 9 days. And I thought that Knobloch correctly read the schedule and said, this is a time to push the backup a little more and dial back a little bit. I mean, they're still both going to play 3 games in 9 days, which is plenty. But I thought, tonight's game was going to be the test. And at this point now I'm willing to predict, which is something I don't like doing, that Skinner will start on Saturday and Pickard on Sunday in the 2 morning games on the weekend. And they'll just treat the 6-game series, Skinner, Pickard, Skinner, Pickard, Skinner, Pickard. Right decision. Unfortunately, Pickard didn't have a great first period, and more unfortunately, neither did his teammates, and they fell into that 3-0 hole. And he bounced back after and gave him a chance to fight back, but that hole was too deep. But as for Knobloch, I think he nailed it, that was the right decision, and that wasn't necessarily an easy one.
Completely agree. Bruce, You can't play your starting goalie to death.
You can't kill him.
You can't kill the guy. It's a really bad idea. They're going to need Stewart's going to sharp for the playoffs. So good work. My good thing, Bruce, was the one. Well, there was, you know, they did score two goals. So there was two kind of rays of light in this game. But the first goal was particularly a fantastic play and one of the few fantastic plays. Starts with Evan Bouchard at his own end, and he absolutely rips a long pass up the ice. He had his moments of disgrace in this game, turning over the puck. But I am noticing, Bruce, that he is skating a lot better than he ever did before. He is really moving well with the puck and making plays with the puck. And this was an occasion. It was an angle pass from his own, deep in his own zone, to Draisaitl at the opposition blue line. And Leon then whips a backhand pass, I think it was, to the center of the ice. And McDavid makes this incredibly clever play where he turns his leg and directs the pass from his leg. He can't get it to it otherwise. He directs it with his leg. I don't think it hit his skate, but I think it hit his leg. And over to Zach Hyman, who absolutely slammed it into the net. Bruce, I haven't seen a goal that lovely since, Busquets, Iniesta, Xavi, and Messi combined for Barcelona. And then this one, it was McDavid playing the role of Xavi or Iniesta, who always just made those great quick passes, you know, deflected pass, you know, just a turn of the foot and it's in the right spot and it's in the net. And it was a beautiful goal and in an ugly game.
I love that Barcelona team. I used to watch the Champions League. This was back when TSN used to actually have soccer rights. And they showed the Champions League on Tuesday and Wednesday. And
yeah.
I watched more of those games than I watched any other soccer. And I became a mammoth fan of Barcelona just based on how they played. I just loved their style of play. And they scored an awful lot of pretty goals on four-way passing plays, occasionally 11-way passing plays.
Well, 30-way. Like they would hold
30
the ball
passes,
forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, there'd be 30 passes. It was incredible.
Everybody would touch it at least once, and the goal scorer would tap it in from the far post.
You know what always gets me in European football, Bruce, is and it's funny because hockey's not like this, but there's always, including the announcers, the cameras, the announcers, everyone, it always goes to the goal scorer. Even if he just had a one touch of the ball and it went in the net. There might have been some guy who made this tremendous play in the midfield and deked out two or three guys and then laid the ball perfectly, you know, across and the guy heads it in. They don't mention it. Like in hockey, and it might be, I don't know why this is, and it just might, maybe because we give assists. Maybe because, or could it be as simple as we've created a statistic, so now we focus on that statistic. They also have assists in soccer, but they give them out quite sparingly.
North American Soccer League, they do give out one.
And they do in the Premier League too, but they don't talk about it, and they never highlight that. Like always the guy. I guess it's just so rare. It's much more rare to score in football than it is in hockey. Even it's about twice this, you know, half as many goals, I guess. So maybe it is just such a miraculous thing to ever score that that's what you care about. But it's just such an obsession there. Whereas here, I think we get it right. I think that often the great play is the player who creates. And I like the fact there's two assists. Actually, I think it's a very effective way, and has been over time, a very effective, durable, fair and accurate way over time for the NHL to measure offensive performance. You don't really need anything else over a full season. There might be a handful of players who have kind of distorted high or low numbers, but generally speaking, it's a pretty good indicator of offensive talent. Anyway, I don't know how I got off on that tangent, but I did.
In soccer, they'll focus on the goal scorer and after a goal, whereas here in North America in hockey, the focus after a goal immediately turns to the coach of the team that's just been scored upon. They do it every single time. Zoom in on the coach on the bench, chewing his cud and trying not to swear.
Well, come on. Often they'll zoom in on the player who made the mistake. Well, like if it's a goal against the Oilers, they always try to pick out some player who made a mistake. I find like they do that too, which I'm okay with. Like the player did make a mistake, so.
Well, there's certainly big mistakes made on the goals against tonight, now wasn't there?
Yeah. Why don't I start this because we're going in order of the goals. So my bad thing is the first goal against. And okay, Vinny Deharnais is going to stick in the top pairing, Bruce. He just can't make plays like this. He switched on the play. I think there's a battle on the boards high in the Oilers' end. And Vinny has switched with Darnell Nurse. They switch sides. And the puck gets pushed into the corner behind Vinny. And Vinny, he's switched with Darnell Nurse. He's got to go get the puck. That's his side of the ice now. He's got to go get it. Instead, he hesitates or he defers. He thinks Nurse is a better puck carrier. He should get it. But Darnell Nurse is waiting for him to get it and covering in front of the net like he should be doing. Anyways, Deharnais signals for Nurse to go get it. And it looks like when you're watching the play the first time, you think, why is Nurse so bloody slow on that play? Like, why did he lose that battle to go get the puck? He could have got it. But it's because of this hesitation from Deharnais, who should have got it, and tells Nurse to go get it. And by then, the Columbus player's in there, and Nurse doesn't really have a play. So then Vinny makes a second mistake. He's moving over to his spot, but he's left the high slot wide open. His player in the high slot is left wide open. As the pass comes, it goes up the boards and then from the player on the boards into the middle of the ice. That's Deharnais' check, and he's nowhere close to it. He's got to make that play, and he's nowhere close. So it's because of his initial hesitation that this whole sequence of pain unfolds. And he has improved. And perhaps if we're patient, people like me, he will improve enough to earn a spot in the top four and to do a good job there. And this is one of the moments that he will be learning from, I will suggest.
Hope so. Yeah, the shot also went right through his skates.
Yeah.
Because he was, he wasn't close enough to block it. And the guy picked the hole and put it in there. He was, my son, who's a like Vinny, a lumbering right shot defenseman in his day, said the play there, he says, because Vinny was the right defenseman, he probably shouldn't be going into the left corner. And I said, from I was seeing their D1 and D2, and D1 is the guy closest to the play, and that was Deharnais, even though it was the left side. They should switch there and leave Darnell to cover the front of the net, which is clearly what Darnell was expecting, because by the time he went for the puck, it was sort of that split second delay. And David, I would suggest that on that goal and the second goal, that a big part of the problem was communication between new D pairings, between Deharnais and Nurse there, and on the CC
Kulak
dead pass to Kulak play, where maybe if they're a little more used to each other, they execute that play a little cleaner, which wasn't the only thing that went wrong there, but it was a big part of it.
Well, go ahead, Bruce.
I'm there already. So this was one where my bad thing is actually a whole, let's call it a minute of pain, especially for Calvin Pickard. And it included the second and the third goal. But before that, it included a wicked slash by Boone Jenner on the arm wrist of Pickard after he caught and saved sort of the first grade A shot that he faced in this rapid succession.
Should have been a penalty, Bruce.
This was, absolutely. He hacked him hard. Yeah. Like, that would be a slashing penalty on anybody. I can't believe he didn't call that. Anyway, they didn't call it. And this was after he'd made a save after all of McDavid, Ekholm, and Bouchard got beaten out of the corner. And the puck went into the slot. And it was Goodrow, I think, that shot the backhand shot. And Pickard gloved it. And Jenner carved him. And Pickard was pretty upset. Maybe he got rattled. I don't know. I do know that they scored 25 seconds later and then another 29 seconds after that. And the first one, again, I'm biased, but I kind of thought it was a missed call on the icing. I rifled the puck down and CC reached for it, but he didn't touch it. And the rule isn't that if he's near it, if they wave it off, the rule is, he's, you know, if it's a hard icing play, you're supposed to, you know, deflect it. And he didn't. Anyway, the linesman decided to wave that off. And CC was, I think, expecting the call. And he lumbered behind the net to get the puck. And Columbus did what they did all night, was skate harder and faster with more purpose than the Oilers. And the guy was on CC, and he tried to get out of it by making a cute little wall pass, 1 foot bounce pass to Kulak, and he just put it behind him. Like, Kulak's route was different than CC's pass to him. Again, I say partly that's just guys that aren't used to playing together. But anyway, the puck went from there to the second Blue Jacket getting the puck behind the net and passing it out in front of the third Blue Jacket. It was completely uncovered because I think the Oilers forwards also thought it was icing, and both Adam Henrique and Corey Perry just sort of coasted off to the bench.
No, that was a different play, Bruce.
Well, they iced it. Wasn't that the one where they...
No, that was a different... That was a...
Oh,
that
no, was... this is the... Where the hell was that?
That's okay. 3 minutes earlier. Where Perry and Henrique go off from McLeod.
Right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Different play. Anyway, nobody was back and recovering like on this icing play. And where were the forwards? I don't know. Anyway, the defense.
Well, they all thought it was going to be icing, Bruce. They all thought it was going to be icing. Kulak thought it. CeCe thought it. And they all thought it because it was icing.
Yeah, and Pickard probably thought it too. Anyway, so I'm going to give a little bit of the blame. Let's say 95% of it to the linesman. But the other 5% can be blamed on the guys that did not play to the whistle and did not execute when they got there.
It's more like 100% of the call was the linesman's fault than 100% of the mistakes were CeCe and Kulak's fault.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. It was two different things, but they did not play to the whistle, and they got burned. And then they had a face-off at center ice and a big fight with newcomer Sam Carrick going at it with a very tough guy, Olivier. That's his first name, Matthew Olivier for Columbus, same guy that gave the black eye to that big hotshot on the Rangers last week.
Oh, yeah. That guy.
Renke?
I don't know what's his name.
Something close to that. Anyway, he's a tough guy, and I'm not sure what Carrick was doing there. Anyway, he got a couple in, but Columbus maintained the momentum. And again, Edmonton... You know, at a point in the game where they need to sort of stabilize, and this time it's Warren Fogle who has the puck in his own zone about 6 feet inside the blue line on the right side. And for whatever reason, he tries to hit Darnell Nurse with a full cross-ice pass inside of his own zone. Of course, it never gets to Nurse, plus Nurse is now out of the play. And the Columbus guy picks it off, cruises right up the middle, essentially a 2-on-1, and he wires a shot from the high slot that goes under Pickard's armpit and through the, I can't remember if it's a 6 or 7 hole, that one went in. And that one was certainly partially on Pickard, and mostly I thought it was on Fogle. I thought, to me, it was a grade A shot, and the turnover was the thing. Anyway, it was poorly played. And just like that, Jenner should still be in the penalty box at this point, right? The score's gone from 1-0 to 3-0. And that was a hockey game, right? They already spent the next 45 minutes gradually scratching back to 3-2. Even then, I'm not sure that they carried the play all that much, but they certainly, they made a game out of it. But that 54 seconds of pain was really the part of the game where this one got decided.
Wasn't good, that's for sure. Yeah, Calvin Pickard. I thought he had. It was a listen. He had time
he
to pick
good
a shot
after that.
But he should have. It was a high enough shot.
Mm-hmm.
It just went through him. It just got through him. It's one of those shots. It just got through him. So It happens.
It's a grade A that should have been stopped and wasn't, but it's still, you know, the guy got a real hard shot with an off passing option, and the goalie was sort of barely prepared for it because the puck was going
on
his own 1 second.
Well, no, he was, if you watch Picker, he's well out. He's well out to cut down the angle. He's in the right position. It just
Got underneath him.
He thought it was
blocker side, and it, anyway.
Yeah, that is a horrible sequence. Ghastly.
Just like your number 3-0. Oh, yeah, yeah. We're still on me, right?
What's your number?
Okay, I'm going to go with 100. That's my number. And that is the number of course, points now that Connor McDavid has after that messy pass on the Hyman goal. It was kind of a messy game when you think about it. And anyways, with that, he got to the 100-point milestone for the 7th time in his career. This pulled him into a tie with Mike Bossy and Peter Stastny for 4th all-time for 100-point seasons. With, of course, the one and only Wayne Gretzky out in front with 15 such seasons. 15 100-point seasons. Mary Lemieux, 10. Marcel Dion, 8. And now we got McDavid, Bossy, Stastny in there. And McDavid broke out of an 11-way pass tie for what had been 6th with quickly the names Orr, Hawerchuk, Curry, Lafleur, Esposito, Trotsky, Crosby, Sakic, Yzerman, Messier. And you'll notice that all of those names are from mostly the 1980s and certainly from the 20th century, with the lone exception of Sidney Crosby, who's 6, which is very impressive. But McDavid, who's 10 years younger, has already got to 7 and climbing up the list. He won't catch Gretzky because one ever does on this kind of records. But
I don't know, Bruce. I don't know. He's got a slight chance. He's got a slight
chance. Yeah. Yeah.
He'd have to do that till he's, 35, 36? No, I think he's got a chance if he stays healthy.
If he got 8 more in a row, he'd be 35, and that would get him to a tie with Gretzky. I'm saying doubtful.
Yeah.
And by the way, he became joined a select list of guys with 75 assists in the season. Wayne Gretzky, 15 times again. Lemieux, 7. Orr, Coffey, and Oates with 5. And McDavid tied with Esposito and Hawerchuk with 4. So again, storied names from the past. And here's a guy in the 21st century who's climbing the list. And that's what impresses me the most.
It is impressive. It's always hard to, without adjusting for eras, compare points. Because you're automatically lifting anyone before the 1970s because they only played between 30 and 70 games a season. And most, they played 30, then 40, then 50, then 60, and then they gradually worked their way up to 82. And there was also dead puck eras in there when it was much harder to score. Looks like we're heading to another one right now where it's getting a little harder to score, isn't it? The goalies are making more saves. Bruce, my number also involves Connor McDavid, but not in a good way. And I just think it spoke to the lack of focus in this game, but his shifts, there's 4 consecutive Connor McDavid shifts in the third period. So of course you want him on the ice and he's probably might stay out a little longer for his shifts, right? In the third period. I think Connor McDavid's average shift length this year is about 1 minute per shift.
It was tonight too.
But those 4 shifts in a row, his first shift was 1:39. That was all even strength. Second shift, 1:43, all even strength. Next shift, 2:39, most of it on the power play. I think maybe all of it on the power play. And then the next shift, 1:51. Bruce, four in a row. Connor McDavid in the first minute of his shift is the best player in the world. But every 10 seconds he stays on the ice after that, he goes from best player to a really good, to an all-star, to a really good player, to a good, to a mediocre player. You know, after about 1:40, he's not a good player anymore. And it's that's not disciplined hockey. And he knows that, I think, and he shouldn't do that. even in a game where there, and there's always there's often extenuating circumstances, like something happens, there's an icing or there's this or that happening to prevent a shift change. So there is that going on, but nonetheless, the four shifts in a row of that length is a little bit extreme.
Yes, it is. And it wasn't like he was creating a whole lot either in this game. It didn't seem like, I don't know how many grade A's we've got him down for, but it wasn't like every shift they were creating a great chance and coming close. Those chances were, it seemed like they were relatively, there was full shifts where there weren't any chances, let's put it that way, and long ones. But
well, on those four shifts, Bruce, mm-hmm. he was in on three grade A chances, all in the power play, So none of the three even strength shifts that were so long did he create any
5 minutes worth of shifts.
Yeah.
Yeah,
indeed. So not as best one with this year. He's had many, you know what? And again, every team is going to have stinker games. Every mm-hmm. player is going to have, yep. every player is going to have some real super stinker games and stinker moments in games. It's just part of hockey. Mm-hmm. It's not a big deal. But they learn from them and they don't have them as much. So,
yeah. Well, to follow up in the first period when it was 3-0 and they were going not anywhere, and I said the worst part about this is they'll probably use McDavid for 24 minutes to try and get back into the games. What I said to my son, and they wound up using him for 24 minutes and 16 seconds tonight in a Thursday night loss at Columbus. And, you know, just deficit from the energy bank. And now they have games on Saturday morning and Sunday morning. And
well, they're in the afternoon in the States, right?
Are
they?
Yeah, I guess in local time anyway. They go off of their local clock. They're plenty early. And of course, the clock jumps ahead on Saturday night, which doesn't help either. But this is where not coming out and taking command of this game early. This is a game you want to win by rolling four lines and just being better than the other guys. And if you look at the standings, the Oilers are better than the other guys. If you watch the hockey game, they weren't. So, but I would like to have seen the lines roll a little bit more, and that those 2 minute shifts, that can't be. Who does he think he is, Phil Esposito?
Did Andre Richard used to have 3 minute shifts? I think someone was complaining. I remember reading
about Esposito that. was sort of the famous one for rolling through three sets of wingers on one shift.
I can never say a bad word about Phil Esposito after a certain hockey series in 1972, Bruce. I will not say a bad word about Phil Esposito.
It's not a bad word. It's part of who he was. We used to say the same thing about Leon when he stayed out for more than 1 minute. Well, Espo might stay for three or four.
Espo time. He was on his own watch. Yeah. All right. Bruce, let's move on to our conundrum. And the conundrum question is, have the Oilers done enough at the training deadline? And I'll start it off with what Ken Holland said tonight on Oilers Now. He said, if that's the case, he was asked, I think, have you done enough? He says, if that's the case, I'll be happy with what we've done, was his answer. He said, he'll wake up Friday morning and make a few calls and see if anything's up. But that was his last answer, which sounded to me an awful lot like probably they're done. At the same time, there have been, Frank Cervalli has been putting out rumors that if Jordan Eberle doesn't sign a contract extension in Seattle, maybe he's done that already, I don't know, as we're speaking, he's inking it, that Eberle might be traded. And then there's Alexander Carrier, who's also has to sign a contract. And I don't, mm-hmm. I haven't checked lately if he has. You have to check this every few minutes, of course.
Right.
Or you're caught out. But Carrier is a right shot puck moving defenseman from Nashville. And right. If he doesn't sign, Nashville could move him as well. So that's where we're at. And those are maybe the two calls that he's going to make. You know, Eberle's agent and Carrier's agent, how's it going? And he'll know then if there's more moves to be made. So Bruce, has he done enough? Let's say he is done at this point. And he's assessed if he's done, he'll feel good about what he's done. What do you think? Has he done enough compared to the rival teams?
Right. I was going to say, ask me in June. Has he done enough? Well, he's done quite a bit. Like, he's changed out or added three players to his team of a, you know, 21 or 22 man roster. That's a fair little bit of turnover. The guy he got today, Troy Stetcher, comes in, doesn't really replace anybody, but he actually gives them a bona fide veteran seventh defenseman presence on the team. But yesterday, I mean, if and this morning, I guess, effectively, he moved out both Sam Gagne and Dylan Holloway to make room for the two newcomers that he picked up in the same trade yesterday, Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick. And all three guys he got are, you need to understand why they would go out and acquire them. They fill a need of different types, with Henrique being, you know, obviously the plum of the guys they got, and you know, an accomplished veteran NHL forward, $6 million player that they got for $1.5 million, essentially. And he has the capacity to play center or wing, really, I would say, second or third line, middle six. He's going to shore up the middle six somewhere. And he can also penalty kill, and he can also power play, which he'll be doing, I expect, from the second unit. But on the penalty kill, we didn't really see much of the penalty kill tonight because Edmonton only had one penalty in this game. Mm-hmm. And he never saw the ice, Henrique. Carrick had one shift to 27 seconds on the penalty kill. Mm-hmm. But they're both face-off guys. They were both north of 50% tonight. 4 of 6 for Henrique, 4 of 7 for Carrick, a lefty, a righty. Like, he checked a lot of boxes with that trade. Both guys can play center or wing, meaning just more and more versatility for Edmonton up front. So that was to get two players in one trade, mind you, first round draft pick, pay the price for it, but got their contracts bought down and into the affordability range. Today's pickup of Stetcher, I liked the player. I've liked him for a long time. I even liked him when he played for Vancouver. It doesn't happen too often. And he's a small guy, but he's feisty as can be. And he plays a very courageous game. He goes where angels fear to tread, and, you know, on his puck retrievals and stuff. And he's a darter, a good skater, and he's not going to score a million points, but he's kind of a right shot Brett Kulak. Would that be a fair description?
Someone compared him to Andrew Ference.
Yeah.
Like that, a guy with a lot of battle in his, and who you just can't keep out of the lineup.
That was Thomas Drantz that said that, I believe.
Yeah.
quoted him in the post I wrote this morning. And the guy,
the Vancouver hockey writer Thomas Drantz, right? For the Athletic, I believe. Yeah.
And a very astute hockey guy that I followed for a long, long time as an original blogger, and he's kind of moved his way up and into the industry. But so each of the guys they got fills something of a hole, but there would be a lot of criticism out there, and I know there is a lot of criticism out there that some of the big holes have not been filled. There's no clear top six right winger, even though they've added a top six caliber forward. But there's also nothing resembling a top four defenseman that some have identified as Edmonton's biggest need, noting that the struggles of Cody Ceci, who did not help his cause on that second goal tonight. Jordan Schmaltz, who's the brother of Nick Schmaltz that plays for Arizona, and he's himself a former player and insider in Arizona. He says, Troy Stetcher is a hell of a sneaky pickup for the Oilers. Dude is like 5'9", standing on a phone book. Plays like he's 7 feet, heart of a lion, and a fierce competitor. I love the move, Oilers fans. Watch him get back to pucks. He's first touch all day, no matter who is barreling down on him. So that was a player, and you know, I've been watching him this year. And Drant said, I see Troy Stetcher as being like a new NHL Andrew Ferentz. Because of his size, his teams always try to build up enough depth to push him down the lineup. Because he's good and a warrior, he always ends up playing a bigger role than the club intended. Really nice ad for Edmonton. So those were two really sort of ringing endorsements from people that have seen him play quite a bit. So
I always liked Stetcher in Vancouver. And I remember the first season when I saw him playing for Vancouver, I thought, geez, why can't the Oilers find players like this?
Mm-hmm.
Because he just has a real, he struck me as a really smart player who can move the puck well. And I don't know about his defending. I don't know. I haven't watched him. I can't say if these appraisals are correct or not, but I just have that strong impression of him as a decent player. Bruce, I'm just going to quickly review kind of the in and the out for the top contending teams in the West. So Vegas essentially didn't give up anything off their team this year. You know, they gave up some picks, including a first and a
Mark
second.
Stone, David.
Now they've given up Alex Martinez to get even more cap space. So they're going to do even more tomorrow. You can count
is
on
he,
it.
Is he, did they actually L2?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Bruce.
Yeah.
So they have given up nothing, and so far they have nothing this year off this year's team, the Futures. They've brought in Noah Hanifin, who's probably a top pairing defenseman, and Anthony Mantha, second line winger. The Avs have done even more off their, but they've given up more off their team this year. They've given up Bowen Byram, who I've always really liked, but again, I haven't seen this year, so I don't know if he's regressed or what's happening with him. So they gave up Bowen Byram and Ryan Johansson, who I understand was underwhelming this year. So down two players, but they gained four. Yakov Trenin and Brandon Duhaime. I think they're both similar kind of aggressive lower line players. They also brought in Sean Walker, who was pretty highly regarded this year as kind of a smaller puck moving defenseman who could defend. And Casey Mittelstadt, who's a slick forward who can score. He'll be their second line center. So four players in, and one of them, maybe, I don't know if Walker will play in their top four, but he might. And Mittelstadt will be on their second line. Dallas brought in Tanev. Calgary brought in Lindholm. Winnipeg brought in Monahan. going out of Vancouver, the only player they gave up was Kuzmenko, who they didn't like and weren't playing much. Dallas didn't give up anyone who they're playing. Neither did the Oilers. They all gave up futures. Each one of those teams, except for Dallas, gave up a second, but everyone else, and including Winnipeg for Monahan, gave up firsts. So the Oilers didn't give up anyone, and they gained Stetcher, Henrik, and Carrick. So a fourth liner, grinder, a second line or third line, like someone in their top, a core 13, Henrik, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah,
and
he's Stetcher, in the top seven forwards, I would say for sure.
And Stetcher, who I wouldn't be surprised, move in to the lineup ahead of one of CC or Desharnais, depending on how things go. I think that I still do think the Oilers have a hole moving the puck. They need one more right shot D-man who can really move the puck. And if CC doesn't step up in that regard, I think he's capable of it. He might be a veteran who can raise his game and get a bit more active. We'll see. But if he doesn't, Stetcher's there. And I think that's excellent to have that option. So I like what the Oilers have done. I was hoping they could get Alexander Carrier. And I don't know the player, like just by reputation, you know, just by statistics and what people say of him. But he's very highly regarded as a puck moving attacking defenseman and a smart hockey player. So if the Oilers could still somehow get Carrier tomorrow, that'd be, in my eyes, great. Mm-hmm. You know, Jordan Eberle, I'm not sure if he's what they need at forward, honestly. I think they need to, it's like they need McLeod, Fogle, and Holloway, their big, fast forwards to step up and be big, fast forwards who produce. They need Kane to do the same thing. they have lots of forwards though, and lots of guys who can score. And I mean, Eberle is a strong scorer. He's a top six scorer at even strength. But I know a lot of people are going to hate to hear this because he's revered by many in this town, but I don't think he's at the top of the list of needs for the Edmonton Oilers, not actually near it. Henrique and a defenseman are what the Oilers needed, a good center and a good defenseman. Another winger, they've got lots of people they can play on the wing. So what do you think?
A natural right winger with, plus offense as both a playmaker and as a goal scorer. There's lots to like about Eberle's game. Having just watched him, I thought he had an absolutely great game against the Oilers on Saturday. And I thought, boy, that player could sure help the team. But of course, guys don't have great games every game. But he sure had one that day. He had a puck on a string and he was zipping it around. But in his case, I mean, he's at $5.5 million. And if you did a double retention job on to get him, you're giving up, more draft picks, probably at least a second to get him and probably a fourth or fifth to get the retention. And and that would get him down to $1.375 million. And at the moment, they don't have that much space. So they basically, what they have left at this moment in time is Dylan Holloway's, they got roughly $1 million, as I understand. I haven't got the new figure from Puckpedia, but I bet it's not much different than that.
So you think if the cost is too high or maybe
I'm not sure they can bring the cost down enough. Well, I guess they could cut a player and work it out that way.
Or move out CC and then bring in Dumba as well, or, try to bring in bring another right shot guy. I just think it starts to be too many new players at some point as well.
That's Colorado's risk. Mind you, they pulled it off in the past. In 2022, they got a stack of new guys and they won the cup. So I guess Joe Sakic's not too afraid of adding guys. Of four players is a lot. And it's 20% of your dressed roster if they're all playing. So, you're risking playing with the chemistry. On the other hand, Colorado got a whole lot tougher in their bottom six with the addition of Duhaim and who's the other fellow they got today?
Yakov.
Oh, Trenin, yeah.
Yakov,
Trenin. Yeah, they're both close to 200 hits on the season. And they bring physicality. That's what the Oilers got Carrick for. I was listening to Jason Greger's show this afternoon, and he pointed out that not one of the Oilers' bottom six forwards has as many as 70 hits on the season. And Carrick's got 137, like literally double. Fogel had 67, and he's sort of bottom sixer. That's played up the lineup a little bit, but they got nobody on the bottom that really lays on the body. And Oilers got one guy, and Colorado got two guys, and arguably the two guys they got might be, slightly better players. I can't say that for sure. On the other hand, I was told by someone who I can't name on the internet because I can't remember who it was, while Vegas was adding the big guy from Washington, 39. Anthony Mantha. And the Oilers were only getting Adam Henrique. And I looked up their stats for the last 3 years, and Mantha's played 160 games. He's got 40 goals and 44 assists, 84 points. And Henrique's played 180 games. He's got 59 goals and 122 points, like far ahead of the other guy. And yet, the guys, the grass is always greener over the septic tank, eh? And that guy, well, if Vegas wanted him, he must be good. Whereas if Oilers get the leftovers that the other teams don't want, is some of the attitude, it seems, that comes across at times. And Adam Henrique's a hell of a player. I don't think he really showed that much tonight. but I do think that he brings a lot of game, and he's going to make his line better. And the Oilers need help in that, you know, second and or third line, and that's where he's going to deliver.
It'll be interesting to see where he lands, because, like, some people don't trust McLeod at third line center for the playoffs. I'm not in that camp. I do trust him there, but I think he might be better on the wing in the top six. Ryan McLeod, I think, if he gets going in the playoffs as a winger, could be a difference maker, a player who really comes to the fore in the playoffs. He just got everything it takes. He's big, he's fast, he's skilled. And if he goes for it, man, he could be a load. I just see the second line wingers as Fogel and Carrick, or excuse me, Fogel and McLeod, with Nuge in the middle probably. And it was interesting how quickly they went back to the Drysdale, Hyman, McDavid thing. Bruce, even though it wasn't working, but your argument for that line, I think, is irresistible at this point. I think that we will see that line. And then we'll probably see Henrik leading the third line. And that's good for me. It's nice to have a player like Adam Henrik as your third line center.
Ryan McLeod was one who was feeling it tonight. He was flying out there, skating. He was like at the top of his skating game, which is considerable. And he was just racing around out there and bringing the puck with him a lot of the time.
So Connor Brown sat out.
Mm-hmm.
And, the only move I don't object to any of them, but the only one I think that I question a bit in hockey terms, Sam Gagne he finally had a really good game. He was back to his self that he had been in the fall when he first came here after his injury. When he's played well this year, Sam Gagne has been a really good winger. He's been a really good winger. Yeah. And I don't see, I understand why they did it, because they can't waive the other guys. They're going to probably be claimed. You don't want to take a chance losing Connor Brown, and people don't want to hear that. But, man, it's not justice for Sam Gagne, because he's outplayed almost, every other Oilers winger not named Warren Fogle, Zach Hyman, and Leon Draisaitl, if you include Draisaitl as a winger at this point. Sam Gagne has been a strong player. So he's been better than Corey Perry. He's been better than Kane.
21 goals. Do you think Gagne's been better than Kane?
I do. I think if Gagne played more, he'd have more goals too. I mean, how many more minutes does Kane have than Gagne? Like twice as many, three times as many?
Well, he's got four times as many goals.
Kane does have a lot of goals. But Kane has been a liability defensively in a way.
Kane certainly has his issues on the defensive side.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're
as a two-way player, Kane scored, like he has been scoring, I'll give him that, but like he has not been fantastic.
Not lately. He's eight games without a goal now. And he's been around it the last two or three games, but he did get an assist tonight. You know, he fired away and Perry tipped it home.
If I'm not mistaken, they're even strength point scoring per 60 minutes is the same. They're similar between Kane and Gagne this year. Kane's played 932 even strength minutes. Gagne's played 257. So a third to a fourth as many minutes.
Right.
All right, Bruce. We'll see what happens tomorrow.
So what's our answer? Did they do enough, or is he still, he's got enough for one move?
Yes tomorrow, or no, Bruce, but it'd be a little move. Yes or no.
I've got this from my friend Wheaton Oil, who's a great follow on Twitter. And Wheaton Oil posits this scenario. He's got Holland, Colin. And he's imagining what Holland's doing tonight. And, well, gentlemen, I think we're done. Then in brackets, stretches out, pours a whiskey, watches the first period. Well, F-bomb. That's a poultry. Maybe we're not.
Yeah, because they interviewed, you know, they interviewed Holland right after in a the different first way. Period. Did you see that? They interviewed
I was doing, I saw he was on, but I was doing scoring chances. I mean, yeah, I need to go back to it. What did he say?
Nothing. He didn't say anything.
Breaking.
Anyway, yeah. Well, I don't think he'd put much weight in this game, but right. That's a good joke.
Yeah,
I just think, you know, you're right, Bruce. They will know in June. Right now, I just think what he wanted most, that right shot defenseman who can move the puck, wasn't there. The market, it was glutted with forwards. There's all kinds of forwards. In fact, they could probably pick up a decent forward for fairly cheap tomorrow. You know, that's the reality. Man. But there's not, the defense market is just empty. You know, Tanev was the top guy. Who's the next guy then? Who's the next guy after Tanev? Walker?
Well, that Walker. And I guess so. People like him. He went for a first round pick.
So did Tanev.
And there wasn't much after them. Like the right shot D man. I hadn't picked Stetcher out.
No.
To the degree, like I said last night on our podcast, I was 100% convinced that Holland would trade for a seventh D-man. That would probably be a right shot. And it would, you know, and they got, I wasn't thinking in terms of stature, but he fits that bill very nicely. The only thing he doesn't have is size, but apparently he has the heart of a lion, so that'll work instead.
He better 5'8" or whatever he is.
5'9" standing on a phone book.
Yeah.
With his skates on.
Yeah. So, you know, I like that pickup a lot because they were talking about bringing in another big Bobby Clobber, right? Like the names were Joel Edmondson, Josh Brown. And when they got Stetcher, I thought, oh,
Brown was the other name out there. And,
yeah. That's
thanks.
But that's no, what thanks. I like to see was them. They were thinking along the lines that you and I were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think. I saw that as a need. They got to get better moving the puck. You can't, CeCe and DeHarnay are below average puck movers for NHL defensemen. It's a big hole on the right side. And if you can fix it, fix it. And I think they were trying to, but I don't think they could. So they thought, okay, our next biggest need, we need another center because we're going to play Leon and Connor together probably. We need another center. And they got the best center on the market, I think. Did they not? Was there a better center?
Pretty good chance. I mean, he's 34 years old, but he's been bringing it at the sort of same level
Monahan
for a long, long time.
Who's the competition that got traded?
Lindholm and Monahan that got traded.
Oh, I guess Lindholm. Is Lindholm on the wing or at center in Vancouver? Or in the doghouse?
Yeah. Last I heard, they were thinking of trading him off to get
exactly
some guy from the Eastern Conference.
Well, there you go.
So that was for Gensel, who did get traded tonight to Carolina. So he's safely stowed in the East.
Thank goodness.
Gensel, at least he didn't go to Vegas.
Well, Vegas may get Buchnevich tomorrow, Bruce.
Uh-huh.
Or Toffoli. We'll see what happens. Vancouver could get Tyler Toffoli tomorrow. The Oilers could get Tyler Toffoli tomorrow. But Toffoli, he's another guy with an expiring contract. They're going to look to move him. So, because they're not going to be signing him. So it'll be interesting with Carrier and Toffoli and Eberle. There could be some action tomorrow. So maybe we'll be doing another podcast then.
Yep. Deadline's at 1 p.m. Mountain tomorrow.
Indeed.
And all then right. Hockey games Saturday morning and Sunday morning. We've been working mornings all week, David. I'm not used to this.
I'm used to working really busy. Yeah. Thanks for talking tonight, Bruce.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.